Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media capital of the world and home of legendary sports writer Peter Gallenbach, St. Petersburg, Florida. J. Morris and Jenny Lee didn't just co-author the new book, Women Are Crazy, Men Are Stupid. They actually lived together as a couple. My own experience, many years removed, is that working on a book with my spouse, a gifted editor, was that to continue doing so would generate the title, Women Are Crazy, Men Are Stupid, Couple Is Divorced. But I digress. Morris and Lee have an advantage over most couples who might put themselves in the position of exposing the intricacies of an interpersonal relationship. They're professional TV comedy writers, so zingers and comebacks are all part of a day's work. Howard began his career writing for one of my favorite HBO series of all time, Dream On, and later wrote for Home Improvement, My Wife and Kids, According to Jim, and The Starter Wife. Jenny was a writer on one of my wife's favorite shows, Samantha Who, and is the author of three humor collections, including Skinny Bitching. And I love that I'm an adult and get away with saying that. Howard and Jenny, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
How are you guys?
Happy New Year. Good. It's great to be here.
You know, I in eighth grade, I was the editor of school newspaper, and we reviewed American Graffiti. And the girl who wrote the review said in the review that the movie was bitchin', and the newspaper got shut down for a month. So when I say saying the word,
wow.
I mean it.
Yeah, you totally.
Well, let me ask you guys right up front. Has writing this book affected the nature and essence of your relationship, either during the writing process itself or since publication?
Yes. Do you want to start, Jenny?
I'll start on that one. You know, I have to say in the beginning of the process, Howard's the one who really pushed forward the book. He was like, I think we should do it. And I was really no. And that was a lot of the book proposal that we had submitted, which was us fighting that out. Because I just thought it was a ridiculous idea to do this as a couple. I was like, we have to protect, relationships are so hard anyway. Why would we add all this extra stressor of working together on it? He prevailed, and because I was like, you know what, if the proposal sells, then I'll do it. And then we did it, and we had a couple more fights. But since the book came out, it's been a great process. Like, I just think the finished product ended up so much, like Howard was right, he was a visionary. Like, it ended up being so much more than I thought it would be that I was really pleased and happy, and I'm really happy that he pushed me towards it. So it's actually smoothed out considerably since the writing of the book.
Well, there have been moments, but I mean, let's put it this way. We're doing a sitcom based on the book right now. So we're doing it again.
I know.
So it couldn't have been that bad, but it was, I mean, you know, the nature of the book is we had to be honest about ourselves. And so, I mean, that was the challenge because, you know, you couldn't, I mean, on the good side is you can't, it makes you deal with everything because you're sort of writing it, and you're writing it, you know, the way the book works is I write sort of the beginning of the chapter and then Jenny responds, and it makes you look at everything. You can't really hide. And we both knew that the book had to be honest, and we had to be honest about ourselves and not be afraid to be embarrassed by, you know, what we wrote. And so it has brought us closer together, but, you know, there are moments, you know, where I would write the beginning of a chapter and let's say I would give it to her and sometimes I wouldn't hear what she thought for several days and, you know, we're living together. So, I mean, you know, so, but it was clearly a challenge, but, you know, if you get through it, I think it has made it stronger.
Well, now that you say you're doing a sitcom based on this, I'm suddenly reminded of that Warren Beatty movie from Warren Beatty line from Madonna's Truth or Dare, and I'll try to paraphrase it, but I think that he was freaked out because she wanted the camera on all the time.
Right.
Like, life didn't exist unless the camera was on her.
Right. He's like, exactly. I remember that totally clear. He's like, why would you even want to say something if it's not on TV? Like, why would you even want to? I thought that was a great line. Sorry.
Wait a minute, how does this work? I've got each of you calling on a different line, and another line is ringing. This is way too complicated.
I know. I'm at home, and I'm on my cell phone, and that was the home phone, which I actually like picked up on someone and hung up on them right away.
And I have an office, so I'm where we actually do much of our writing. So I'm at the office.
Now, did you guys plan to that this would, you know, be sitcom material in the beginning? Well, let's say not at the very beginning when Howard, you were convincing Jenny to do it, but at what point did you realize that this had potential for something else?
Well, as we started writing it, first of all, this is our, I've been doing this for almost 20 years now, sitcoms and comedy. And so as we were writing the book, and what I love about the book, about writing a book, is it gives you so much freedom that you don't have, on television, especially network television. But also there's, it was a great experience in and of itself, but as we were writing it, I kept thinking, oh my God, this is a great episode. This would be a great episode. And because we are both, it's just our nature to be funny and certainly joke with each other at the most stressful of times. We just thought it was a natural fit. And once the book got a really good response, we just sort of said, we have to do this, So we're doing it for ABC actually. And we actually started pre-production like last week. So we're very excited.
So you have you're doing a pilot, or have you sold the series?
We're doing a pilot.
Doing a pilot, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But
so we wrote the script first. We sold it like on a pitch based on the book, and then we got the green light that we get to make the pilot like the Monday before Christmas. It was the best early Christmas present ever, probably.
I would think. Writing it, you own it, a great deal.
Yeah, of course, now we have to cast people as ourselves. So that's a little tricky.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how that turns out. How close are you to doing that?
We are starting casting next week, so I'll tell you. We'll call you back.
Yeah, and if you have any ideas, feel free to send them our way.
Wow. Yeah, I was just going to ask, who do each of you ideally see playing yourselves, whether it happens or not? Who would who is Howard and who is Jenny?
Well, Jenny has someone she loves.
Well, I mean, it's funny because they ask us, they're like, who's your prototype? Who's your prototype of what would be the ideal? Which, of course, mine is like a movie star, and she would never do TV. But I love Isla Fisher. I think she's so great.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought she'd just be like super winning. But, I mean, we've already been told like, oh, dream on, basically.
I just want a solid comic actor. It's also very sweet, the pilot, too. So someone who can do the sweet stuff and is not, it's sort of, I think the sweeter parts of the book are actually in the script for the pilot. So,
right.
We
just didn't want to have, do the snarky relationship sort of thing. Because, at its heart, it's like a couple who are trying, who both kind of been through a bunch of relationships before, and this one, they're really trying to make it work, and life and everyone else is kind of complicating their love affair. So it's definitely a romantic comedy sitcom.
Okay,
and also,
so
the premise of the book is the same premise of the series, which is basically two people who've been divorced and are really trying to do it better this time. And I think that's what sort of drives the book and drove this whole idea of you really don't, do you want to be stupid and crazy all your life? I mean, you can't help it. But, it's really driven by the sort of, other marriage, the failure or whatever you want to call it. The learning experience of it not working out sort of drives the book and, of course, drives the series too.
So Howard, not thinking Bob Saget is you?
No, I'm not thinking that, but you never know. You never know where you're going.
How many people are you putting out of jobs by creating the show yourself, owning a chunk of the show, writing it yourselves, and how many writers and other people are going hungry because you guys are doing all this yourself?
Well, we want to, hopefully on a series, you need a lot of help. So
yeah,
we want
to. If we get to get it on the air, we'll definitely bring another writer. So hopefully we're making jobs.
And there's a tough part. The two of you are writing the pilot, have written the pilot, I guess, and let's say move forward with the series. Who makes the final decisions on the script?
You mean between us?
Yeah, the crazy partner or the stupid partner?
You want to take that, Jenny?
Go ahead. Please, Howard, you answer.
No. Actually, you know, the great thing about the book and the show for us has been it's all about both of our points of view. So, you know, Jenny will say to me, if I wrote a scene with Jenny in it, obviously, because we split up the scenes and then we put them together, then we argue. And what's great about it is she's like, I would never say that. Women don't say that. They don't think that way. And whereas you have so many romantic comedies either written by a woman, you know, or written by a man, where you get like their, you know, it's that sort of, we really have the dual point of view on this. And that's actually sort of been the magic, I think, of the book and certainly the experience of the book and the series, is that we just sort of, you know, I sort of defer to her in terms of the Jenny character, and I think she defers to me often with the Howard character. But often what's striking to me is often she'll write funnier lines for Howard than I would even come up with, because I think partially because we know each other so well. What do you think, Jenny?
No, I agree. I think it's the version in your head of, like, who does it – I mean, so the script writing was very equal. I mean, in terms of, like, if, you know – knock on wood, God willing, we get the show on the air, then it would be, you know, Howard obviously has so much more TV experience than I. He is technically the showrunner, and I will, you know. But I'm very excited to do, like, costumes and set design and things that Howard has really no interest in, basically. So we have a good, equitable sort of split up here.
Will the book, and because the book has two voices, alternating voices, will the show have a narrator or a narrative in that sense, either, you know, in the way that like Dream On and Scrubs, we get inside the person's head, we see what they're dreaming about or thinking about, or in like Arrested Development, there's a narrator. Any of that kind of voice to it, or is it strictly, you know, what you see on the three cameras, that kind of thing?
Well, I think there's two different questions. One is that I mean, there won't be a narrator per se, but there's certainly a dual point of view. And that's sort of, you know, what we're really – that's what I think is really the most exciting thing about it, because you know, if you watch this show or if you read the book, it's not just the male point of view. It's not just the female point of view. It's really sort of both. And that's kind of – you know, you often see romantic comedies that are very, you know, sort of chick flicks or whatever. They're sort of geared towards that. But this is really both. And that's so, you know, we want to really keep that – alive. You know, that's really,
you know, interesting, the book, because in the beginning when we were discussing the format of the book, we were debating like the whole he said she said format, which is like he relays a story and then you give my version of the exact same story. But then I was like, oh, it might get redundant, you know, a little bit here and there. So we kind of gave ourselves the freedom where Howard kind of started the journey and then I would respond. So I could either respond if, like, I didn't agree with his version of the story, or I could kind of go off on my own tangent and be free to, like, talk about the same sort of topic, but on the female side of things, and which actually, like, opened it up, I think, a lot, which was fun. So, you know, there'll certainly be those times when men and women see things completely differently, so I think, you know, that enlightens everybody. But then there are the times when it's just, you know, I didn't see it any way that he was seeing it at all, and then I'll just, it's like, here's the strictly female point of view, you know.
And also, you know, the other thing that about that was because of the structure of the book, it sort of forced you to look at the other person's point of view. And it's something in life you don't do as often as you either say you do or you think you do. But this way you go in a room alone and you're reading their point of view and you're going, oh, my God, like that's what she was thinking then, or that's how – that's actually how they think. And this is when we, you know, sort of as men we default to, she's crazy. And, you know, I mean, and it's sort of like you never – this was such a great exercise for us of going, oh, my God, this is really what you're thinking. You know, I mean, in romance has always been like,
case is, wow, he wasn't thinking at all, basically.
Then, well, that's often the case, you know. And you know, it's like they just say that we're so men and women are so innately different. And, you know, when you do understand it, you can, you know, you have a lot more, it's just very helpful. Even though you still, you know, like, it's like we always say, there's no cure for this disease, you know,
right.
But you can certainly get it under control or control it better, you know.
I want to ask you, I mean, I was, as we're talking here, I'm thinking that one of the things I notice about the book is the difference in the way, Howard, you tell a story or the way you write a chapter and then Jenny responds. And I was kind of reminded of the way I'll tell a story and it's got all this stuff and I'm pointing out all these things. And my wife could tell the same story in about three sentences. And so,
right.
So I think what happens in the book here, Howard, you've taken the lead, you know, and you'll tell this whole thing, and I don't mean to sound insulting that it's long, but because that's the way I tell stories. It, you know, it's page after page. Jenny will jump in with a couple of very short, pithy comments, and then we're on to the next chapter. And it's like, you know, and the effect is the same. You chuckled when Howard was telling the story or the incident or whatever it may be. Jenny jumps in, tells the same thing in shorter space, and you're still laughing. And it's just men and women, I guess.
Yeah.
That is another difference, but she, you know, sometimes when you can say it with one line, you know, she has one particularly hilarious line, you know, in the book that, you know, her entire response to my chapter, my very long chapter was one line, and it made me laugh very hard, but I also realized she got out of writing a chapter.
Yeah.
Now wait a minute. I want to know which one that is. My first thought was it's about Elizabeth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
It's funny. I had a lot of friends who were like, "Oh my gosh, that's so funny!" Because when I was reading that chapter, that's the only thing I was thinking about. Being like, "Oh, I wonder what she looks like." Like that.
explain though, Jenny. Explain what the chapter was, and then.
The chapter was Howard discussing like his major infatuation with his college girlfriend and all the drama and heartache over this one girl in college. I mean, when he was telling me the story, he's going on and on about her. And in my head, again, like NASA, the first thought that came to my mind is like, oh, well, is this girl pretty? That's what I was most interested in, not his journey, but like, oh, what does she look like?
Well, and of course, the guy reading that chapter, the first thing he's thinking is, I wonder how big her boobs were.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You know, he's just listening to the story. And that was great because you had Elizabeth had a great comeback line in there where you were just so crushed by the fact that she just would not have sex with you, would not have this physical relationship. And she says, we're on parallel lines. Getting close but never intersecting. It's just like,
it was
a great line.
Yeah, we can get close but we'll never touch. Believe me, it's haunted me since I was 18, that line.
Well, and it's, along that line, Jenny, I wonder if you could excuse Howard and I for just a second while we talk about seventh grade girls.
please do.
I read that with such I identified with what you wrote about in that chapter about sixth grade. You understand how to make the girls laugh, and you're getting along great. And you're thinking, oh, this is wonderful. You go away for summer break. You come back, and all of a sudden they're wearing training bras. They've got breasts, and it's like you're crushed. You don't know what to do. Plus, that was a lost year for me. I don't know what happened that year.
Yeah, it's the beginning of our major stupid. You know, we take a huge leap into stupid, you know, in seventh grade when they come back and have breasts. It's very confusing.
It's, you're right. I mean, I so love that. Every guy should read that chapter, if nothing else. And of course, the one line chapter of Jenny's that follows it. But I was thinking, I remember seeing those girls who made me insane and lose a whole year of my life at my 25th reunion several years ago, 25th high school reunion.
Ooh, how
and,
was that?
Well, and it was okay, you know, but the thing was, I'm looking at these girls, three or four of them in particular, actually two of them in particular, and I'm thinking, I forfeited an entire year of my life because I couldn't take my eyes off of you four or two or however you want to count. And what was funny was, the one girl, the one girl I never went out with. Nothing ever happened. But it was clear to anyone who knew me that I was just, you know, just so focused on her. And here's the crazy thing. There was a dinner the night before the reunion, and about 20 of us are sitting around the table, and girl next to me is talking to me, and for the life of me, I thought she was somebody, she was the spouse of someone I went to school with. So I finally turned to the guy on my right, who I've known all these years, and I said, "Who is that?" And he says, "It's so-and-so." And I said, "Oh, shit." You know, it's like, that's her? But, you know, anyway. And Jenny, let me come back to you now that sure. We've gotten that out. you acknowledge in the course of the book that you spent 4 hours arguing for the use of an asterisk in one chapter. Is that time well spent?
To me, it always is. I think it's one of those things where, when the crazy sort of takes over and you're just like, I'm a bulldog and I'm not going to let go. Because there's that point, I think, where when, you know, you start kind of women, you know, or I get a little irrational / hysterical. And guys just check out. They're like, I don't even know what you're saying. And they stop listening. But my point is that somewhere in there, this is never going to end unless you start listening to me and at least, like, let's deal with the situation. Because it will just only escalate. So in my idea, it's like, just get in there, you know, wade in. Don't try to dissuade me. But, like, somewhere in there, I promise you, there's a rationale in my head. Like, you can't understand it as a guy immediately, but somewhere there's something going on. So you might as well just, like, deal with it. So it's just like, you know, that's kind of like how Howard has learned to deal with me, which is like, okay, you know, now I think we have a really good pattern of communication where I'm feeling like a little worked up over this thing, and then he'll talk about it a little bit, and I'll tell him. I'm very honest these days. I'm like, I'm of the age now where I'm like, I don't expect men to be mind readers. I will completely ask for what I want. And I will sometimes tell him, be like, this isn't going to go away. So we either, like, spend some time with it and, like, talk me down or figure out what's going on, or you're never going to go to sleep tonight. So
yeah, I mean, the key thing here from the male point of view is never get between a woman and her crazy. All right? You
right,
do not
right.
want to put yourself in that line of fire. Okay, that, you know, the crazy will burn itself out. And, you know, I mean, as men, I think the huge mistake that we make, and believe me, no one's made more than me, is, you know, you try to fix the crazy, you try to
right.
ration with the crazy. You have to just accept the crazy. And, you know, if her mother's coming in 20 minutes, you just sort of accept that there's a certain level of crazy that's taking over. And you have to be supportive. You don't sort of abandon her, but you have to, you know, get out of the way of it. Do not make yourself a target. So that's one major thing that came from our experience with the book.
You are a wise and gifted man, Howard. Well, 21 years of marriage, and I think that the greatest thing that I've learned is to get out of the way of the crazy, and not try to fix every problem, and not try to understand every issue. Just to be patient, nod my head sometimes, smile, and, you know, be thinking about. It's kind of like sex in the sense that while it's going on, sometimes you just have to think about, you know, yeah, what's the classic Mickey Mantle's coming up to bat, and
right.
thinking it's two men on, and you know,
right.
there's you're down by one run. It's the bottom of the ninth, and you know you're thinking about anything but what's going on in front of you, because you know and you pray it will soon pass. Something else
right.
will replace it.
And if there's like things that are insane that come out of her mouth, you know, you agree. It's
exactly.
You know, it's
right.
it's you know, you as a young man, I think it's a young man's disease wanting to fight and change. But I think as you get older and have a few failures under your belt, or at least moments when this blows up in your face, you know, you sort of learn to go with it a lot more. And the great thing is that you know, eventually it does burn itself out. I mean, we have seen that too. And so, but it's never time. With Jenny arguing for 4 hours over an asterisk, it's never wasted time.
Yeah, we'll get a show. You know, well. Now we have to say we're like, we'll put it in the show. That's our idea now. We can be like, this will all come back later. Everything's kind of worth like a little bit of time in comedy, probably, to laugh it out.
That's funny. My father used to say to me that nothing bad could ever happen because they just turn around and write about it somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
True. True. That is the you know, as writers, maybe it's pathetic, but we do adopt that philosophy, and I think it works for us.
There is something on page 74, and you don't have to thumb to it right now, but there was reference to a conversation between the two of you, or conversations between the two of you about football and how, you know, your attitude is, Howard, your attitude is that she really just shouldn't talk to you during football. And I was reminded of something.
By the way, first of all, she can talk during the commercials. It's just during the game.
I completely get that, and you'll see where this is going. In 1993, I wrote a book called Why Men Watch Football.
Oh, excellent.
Which, by the way, I'll tell you that Sports Illustrated said it was a sign of the apocalypse. I just want to get that in. But,
oh, okay.
But one of the quotes in the book was actually, and I'm tying this all in, was actually from Home Improvement's Tim.
Oh, really?
He said at one point, and I'm paraphrasing because I couldn't find a copy of the book quick enough, why do you have to talk to me during football? Did I talk to you while you were giving birth?
Yeah, I remember that line. Yeah.
So, you know, is that – now, Jenny, is football – is that stupid or is that crazy?
Here's my take. I mean, I think it's – I think I only get annoyed about the whole sports thing when – men, and I've had this experience in writers' room, actually in the Samantha Who writers' room, where all these guys kind of get a little bit, like, patronizing when it comes to women talking about shoes or girly things, that they think it's so, like, they kind of roll their eyes. But I'm like, men talk about football and golf in that exact same way that women talk about, like, shopping. So it's like, you give us our thing and don't patronize them, we'll let you have your little fun of discussing and agonizing over every little detail. I mean, Howard's been, I mean, when the first year of our relationship was, you know, Howard's a huge Patriots fan, was the season where they went undefeated and then lost in the Super Bowl. And it was just so emotional in our house. He could not turn. When they lost in the Super Bowl, he clicked that remote so fast, it, like, off, and he literally would not speak of it for 3 months. Like,
I was in a lot of pain.
And, like, I couldn't even bring it up. I couldn't ask about it. I was like, oh, wow, men and women deal with things very differently, because I was like, are you okay? And he's like, don't, we can't talk about it. It's off. It's over. It's dead to me. And I'm like, okay. But it was so up and down. I was like, oh, this is their emotional roller coaster where they get off a lot of angst. Because sometimes I tell this to Howard, like, I get all, like, angsty or I'm feeling in this way. And I like, it kind of helps me to watch one of these melodramatic shows like Grey's Anatomy where it's super angsty because you feel like you can burn off some of your whatever's going on in your own life into these shows about fictional people. And I think guys do that with sports.
Jenny,
well, also,
I'm sorry.
I have to just amend one thing. Not that I mind that she talks, because I mean, during football, I'm saying. I mean, but it's that Jenny watches football from a woman's perspective, and that perspective is, you know, when the kicker misses a field goal, she feels terrible for the kicker, even if it's on the opposite team, and she starts thinking about the kicker's wife or the, you know, or the their
like
family.
His mom is watching, and then he's going to feel bad, and then his girlfriend's going to be upset, and what's
and she said, you know, it's like she'll ask me, like, do you think they cry in the locker room, and, you know, all these things that are like, I'm like, I've never even thought about that. I just want to know what's going to happen next. So it's sort of, you know, it's she watches it in a very unique way. But, you know, I have to say it has made me a little more sensitive to the kickers' families and, you know.
I'm always at, oh, I'm noticing when, like, when the coaches get a haircut, I'm like, oh, look, Bill Belichick got a haircut. And Howard's like, what are you talking about? Who cares if he got a haircut? And I'm like, oh, but it's like, you know, it's out of his eyes or whatever.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys that you should go to whymenwatchfootball.com and you can read the book online for free, and I think you'll get some interesting stuff from that. And Jenny, I have to ask you, speaking of Grey's Anatomy, is that a reality show or is that a drama?
Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah, I've read your book. I'm just curious.
Oh, it's a drama, melodrama.
Okay. Just melodrama. Just checking. Howard, didn't you talk about Grey's Anatomy a little bit in the book and how you heard all about it and you thought it was she was describing real life?
Well, I, you know, we often – Jenny takes the lives of characters very seriously and has at one point confused me, so I actually believed that they were real. It's one of those things where you start, you know, when you do get involved with the crazy a little bit, and then you start believing it. And she sort of gets very emotional when she watches those shows and the emotional lives of, you know, I was a huge fan of The Shield. And, you know, we started watching it. Our first year together was the last year of The Shield, I guess, or maybe that was our second year. And, oh, my God, I've never, you know, it's like the way she watches football. It was a whole other experience. But we talk about the Sex and the City movie and the way that women bond to those characters in a way that we don't understand. You know, it's like spending time with friends, and they have these very strong relationships, just as women sort of are, you know, better at relationships and more attuned to them. They have them with characters also.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's true, Jenny? Or
I find myself sometimes quoting like things from like past Friend episodes and saying, like, because I mean, behind those characters, I mean, when they're really well drawn out and you get to know them over the years, like, you know, obviously there's a bunch of writers in a room who live some of these experiences and are like sharing. So I'm always like, it's valid. Real people wrote these characters. So, you know, some of this stuff has happened. You know, we're now going to be proof of that. So.
Well, speaking of sitcoms, I wonder if you guys have a couple extra minutes. We've run a little bit over, but I wanted to ask each of you about one of the shows that you've been associated with. Do you have another minute or two?
Sure.
Okay. Howard, let me start with you. Dream On. David Fury and Bill Prady have both been on Mr. Media
okay.
with me at times. And so this is not the first time I've expressed my love of that show. Why doesn't that show get any rerun love, or you know, why doesn't it come up more often in conversation, I guess is what I'm wondering.
Well, I think now it's you know, it's been a while, you know, and it's so funny because when I worked on that show, that was my first real job out in Hollywood, and at the time, HBO was not the HBO we know now. I mean, it was their only series. To the point where, which was fantastic in a lot of ways, because the executives were like, whatever you want to do, just do it. But at one point they, you know, they had asked us about killing one of the main characters, and we were trying to explain to them it's a series, you know, they have to keep going. But it was a, you know, so, but at the time when I was working on it, I would say 1 in 10 people actually knew about it. You know, I mean, this was way before The Sopranos and way before Sex and the City, and then it ran on Fox for a while, but they put it in a cleaned up version, which was not as
no.
You know,
not
it's hard
same.
it's hard to you know, we always film two versions of the show and with the idea of syndication, but it's not a it was a show that wasn't meant to be cleaned. You know, when you cleaned it up, it was basically a show about sex, and when you clean that show up, it lost a little something, I think. But it is
kind of be like squeezing Californication into NBC.
Yeah, that's not going to work. Or even when they tried it with Dexter, you know, they put Dexter on CBS for a little while, and you know, it just you know, whenever
Sex
you sort
in
of
Sex and the City worked. They took when they see it, and I feel like Sex and the City, everyone's like, oh, it's just women talking about sex, but it's not, because when they cleaned that up and put it on CBS, Howard's mother started watching it, you know, at a state where she would have never watched the HBO show because it's too graphic. But, like, on TBS, when they clean it up, if they take out all that part, it's still about, you know, four women being friends. So I thought that worked very well.
Right. Well, you are correct.
I miss the sex.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We're back to boobs again, I think.
Right. It always comes back here.
Now, that's a horrible way for me to segue, Jenny, to ask you about Samantha Who, and I apologize to everyone who's thinking what a horrible person I am at that point. But I am wondering, I mean, the show got off to a very hot start. My wife found it late and then went back and caught up on all the shows, and I mean, I watched most of that with her. What do you think eventually did that show in? Why is it not still on? It was considered a very smart, very female show.
Totally. You know, it's hard for me to figure. I actually worked on the first 13, and then when the writer's strike happened, we were on strike for a while, and I was the last hired, and they had to cut costs, and I became a casualty of the strike. So I unfortunately did not get to finish the season. So the first 13, I had a great time, and it just caught on, and it's so wonderful to see, like, everyone, like, be excited about something. And Christina Applegate was unbelievable. She's so funny, and she's just, she can just be charming or make you laugh with, like, a smile or a look. So it was a very talented cast. You know, it's hard to say, like, why. The problem with that, like, those high concept premises, I mean, to me was, like, you know, if she didn't really have a personality. I mean, you knew all the stuff in the flashback that she was, like, a bad girl, but, like, the whole journey going forward was kind of a tricky one to be like, oh, I used to be like this, but now I want to be good. It was, you know, it kind of sometimes made it a little dicey to go back and forth in terms of stories, I think. So, and then I think did they move time slots? I'm not sure exactly when the down.
Well, also, I think though you hit the nail on the head in terms of high concepts are very hard to maintain in a series. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody loves the pilot and the first, you know, the first 13 episodes, you can still play off that concept of, you know, I don't know who I am, I'm finding out all these things about myself. But eventually a show like that or a show like Flash Forward or anything, they have to sort
of... Dollhouse. So she has no personality. Like, how can you go forward with it?
Yeah, I mean, they're very hard to maintain. And, I mean, I think that's been the challenge of Lost, but they've done it really well, but they've had off years. And you know, it's just really hard because it's not... The nature of series is something that happens, you know, in your living room every week, which is why I think the procedurals do so well, because you can tune them in or tune them out. But... you know, and I think that might have been the problem with Samantha Who. But what amazes me about that show is that everywhere we go, we hear people talk about how much they liked it.
Yeah.
I think Twin Peaks is another example of a show.
Exactly.
It just, you know, when you stretch to that second season, it's like, you know, it's not working.
Right.
Sorry.
It wasn't meant to be.
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I you know, normally at this point I would ask what's next for you guys, but obviously the pilot of Women Are Crazy, Men Are Stupid is the big thing on your plate, I guess.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And
now,
if anybody wants to buy the book, it's out there.
I was going to say.
Feel free.
I was going to tell everybody that you can find Women Are Crazy, Men Are Stupid by Howard J. Morris and Jenny Lee on sale at great bookstores everywhere, or also at mrmedia.com. Is there a I know in the book that you guys give out email addresses. People want to write to you.
Right.
I think it's Crazy Jenny and Stupid Howard. But at
Gmail.
Right. Is there a website? Are you on Facebook with this book at all? Any of that kind of stuff going on?
Howard's on Facebook, and then but I have to say the email response has been great. Like I was getting in the beginning, I was getting like. An email or two a week. I mean, a week. It was so great. And I've heard, like, all these fabulous stories about people and their relationships. There was a girl who was, like, 20 years old, in college, first relationship. She said first time she's ever been in love. And then we've heard from people who've been married for 25 years. And so it's been such a fun experience to hear, like, that it's connecting with across so many different levels.
And if you write Jenny at Crazy Jenny at Gmail,
like Crazy
Jenny Lee, she will write you back. She has become friends with people all over the country who've read the book, and it's great hearing, like, you know, whether it was the first one we ever got was a woman in Puerto Rico who just walked into the store and bought it and was having trouble with her fiance, and so she's maintained email friendships with all these people. It's been a great experience, and it all. You know, the point of the book is to make you feel less alone. And so when they email us, they make us feel less alone, which is great.
Well, Howard, Jenny, it was very nice of you to come on the show and to stay a little later than we planned. It's a lot of fun. The book is a real fun read. And I wish you a lot of luck with the TV show. I hope that goes well.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You get it sold, and we'll have you back, you know, we'll have you back to talk about it, get it on the air.
We'd love that. Yeah,
that would be great.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. And, folks, for more TV-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. As I mentioned, that's where you can listen to previous interviews with David Fury, who worked on Dream On, but is also an executive producer of 24. And Bill Prady, who worked on Dream On and is now the co-creator and executive producer of The Big Bang Theory. And you subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.